Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Hello, welcome to CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, here with Bill Goldberg. How are you?
I already have grease on my hands this morning, so I'm doing wonderful.
You guys are a couple hours ahead, so I know you get an early start over there in the garage, and then take a little break, do the podcast, get back at it.
Yeah, I finally had my bike delivered from Danny Counts Customs this morning. It only sat in Oklahoma City for 2.5 months, so yeah, it was an interesting start to my morning, pushing my bike a half mile from the front to the garage with a dead battery and no air in the front tire. But yeah, it's the normal day here in Texas.
Welcome our guest, Mike Spagnola. Mike is the president and CEO of SEMA. You guys have seen him before. He's been on the show before. We just wanted to catch up with Mike now that the dust has settled a little bit after SEMA. And actually, I just came back from the MPMC event where we talked on a previous show as well. An event that I realized that I've been going to for about 17 years. So it's been going for a long time. I've kind of reduced my commitment to one day instead of 3 days because we know a lot of the companies that we meet with, and I don't want to take up everybody's meeting time, and I want to let some of the new people go in there, but I still want to get some face time with especially some of the companies that aren't necessarily out here on the West Coast that we don't get to visit. But it's good to do that event. Mike, welcome.
Yeah, it's a great event. Thank you. And Bill, I'm jealous. I don't have grease on my hands this morning. Unfortunately, I've got a pen in my hand and a computer. That's about it right now.
You know what? Sometimes we have to work.
I know.
Yeah. So and now the camera is freaking out and you're going nuts on camera.
Oh, that's beautiful. We couldn't pay for that. We could not pay for that.
Oh my gosh.
Mike, please tell me you can see that.
I could see it. Hang on a second. Let me
You can try to
spend all this time setting up the studio.
Just keep it going. It's beautiful.
That's hilarious.
While he gets that, see if he can. You feel free to turn the camera off and then back on. He's got jazz hands all of a sudden.
Jazz hands.
Oh, it's not working.
No. Well, you can jump off and reconnect.
The whole podcast.
Yeah.
Bill, you've got all the UTVs and stuff on the property. There was no way to tow the motorcycle from the front gate,
How am I going to tow the motorcycle?
You got to get somebody to sit on it for you, right?
Yeah, and it's a 100. Yeah, it's just a monster. It's my big black West Coast chopper. So the rake is huge. I can barely maneuver the damn thing. There's no way.
Was this the bike you were talking about selling
at Barrett in Vegas? The issue with Barrett Jackson was the VIN was not embossed or stamped on the frame itself. But Jesse James doesn't do that. He puts certificates underneath the seat. Long story short, it didn't sell because it wasn't entered. And so it had been sitting at Danny's at Counts Customs for a year and a half.
And I got
the garage done and rock and roll. It's finally here. So.
Yeah, it's a cool bike. I think
I'm not going to give my affirmative check mark to haul bikes. I'm just saying. I won't go any further.
Okay. Mike, so.
I'm back.
He's back. He's back. I've got a handful of things I want to get into, but let's get a little download from SEMA because SEMA was different overall for the year, right? We were leading up to the F1 race and all the build out in Vegas. And we had SEMA Fest, which I thought SEMA Fest was fun. I
Yeah.
You know, as I was saying on the podcast before, it was like, you got to give this a couple of years to work itself out because you don't know what to expect. But honestly, we had a good time. You and I were there, I think, two nights for the concert series, hanging out. And, you know, your family was there and Tammy was there, and we had a great group, and it was fun to see all of that. But what's your download on that?
So, you know, obviously SEMA is the biggest automotive car show, car event that consumers want to go to that can't, right? I mean, it is a business to business event where manufacturers and buyers get together to celebrate our industry and to talk about products and to buy and sell parts, and all of that happens. And consumers want to go, and let's face it, they find ways to sneak in, and guys build cars and some of that happens, anyway, people would love to go to the SEMA show, and we are now looking at, you know, how do we continue with a business to business show and allow manufacturers and buyers to get together and do the kind of business that they need to do, but also have some sort of consumer event where consumers can come in. And so we opened up the show on Friday to consumers, and then tied it into the SEMA Fest, where we really just do this whole festival and celebrate the whole automotive car culture, music, you know, all of that comes together. And it's got a couple goals, right? It's as we expand out, and I've always felt like SEMA is probably one of the best brand names that we kind of hide under a bushel, right? I mean, to get it out there better, mm-hmm. and to celebrate all of that and to allow consumers to be part of it. We also need those consumers going forward. We've got to connect better with those consumers, because we're going to need them as we battle just a lot of government intervention into our industry. And we're going to need those names, those people, to be able to do all the things that we have to do in advocacy form, to get out and write letters and to talk to their politicians about this car culture, and that we're not bad guys, and that we should be able to continue to celebrate our culture. We should be able to continue to drive the vehicles we want to drive and support this lifestyle. So it's kind of a twofold thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, we just did an economic impact study. We're a $337 billion a year industry to the economy. And that was really important for us to do, because the legislators listen to that kind of stuff, right? When they see what impact they're having on our industry, you know, they start to think twice about deciding whether or not we're all going to be driving EVs, or you can't put an exhaust system on your car, or superchargers are bad things, or any of that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah,
I hope you're right, Mike.
Yeah. And speaking of, what's your take on EV? Because it's a topic we address a lot on the show here, because so many new cars are EV, but you know, certainly the adoption rate for EV isn't quite what everybody expected. And honestly, walking around the SEMA show floor, although we're seeing some innovation in EV, my personal take is it's not necessarily well received.
Yeah. So here's kind of our stance, and my stance personally, even, is that EVs aren't a bad thing. They're part of our future. We're seeing even EV adoption in conversion, right? Taking a 69 Camaro or whatever it might be and doing an EV package in it. All we're saying is that EVs are part of our future, but consumers should have choice. The government shouldn't pick winners and losers and put their thumb on the scale and saying it's EV and EV only. We're all for cleaner air. We're seeing hydrogen really starting to come into play, and even BMW and some of the other OEs are now announcing hydrogen. We're seeing synthetic fuels. We're seeing biofuels. We're seeing a lot of technologies, and the government should allow innovation to continue forward and allow different forms of technology to continue, and consumers should have a choice. And so we're against, you know, California wants, I don't know what it is, 30-some% EVs by 2026 and EV and EV only by 2032. And 17 other states have tried to adopt that same policy. But look, number one, the infrastructure is not in place. We know all the issues with EV.
Yeah, we know the issues.
But again, they are, look, they're cool. They have a place. They have a place certainly in city driving. But there's a lot of other technologies that should move forward. you know, ICE vehicles, internal combustion engines are not bad. It's what you put in them. And so if we can do cleaner fuels to put in them, then that technology should continue to be able to move forward. And again, consumers should have a choice. So, you know, we know that in certain applications, EVs are not good.
So, and also SEMA is a huge platform to see those new technologies, possibly, right? Yeah. Alternatives. And if you get rid of that platform, then you get rid of the alternatives, hence, you know, us being told what to do all the time again.
Yeah, we did a 25,000 square foot piece of SEMA show this year that was all the future of transportation. And we celebrated all those technologies and showed these different technologies and the forms and where they're going. And so I'm with you, Bill. It's we got to allow innovation to continue to move forward. That's what's moved this industry. That's what's moved this country is innovation. And it shouldn't be stifled. And again, government shouldn't pick winners and losers.
I guess my main question to you, Mike, would be, how do you get the major manufacturers that have backed out over the past number of years back?
Yeah, some of them are coming back, and we're working on that now. Ford is back at the SEMA show, and we've got some others coming back. Toyota took a huge stance at the show this year, and they're coming back again next year. They're starting to recognize they need us, and it's just that relationship, right? The OEs in general have pulled out of shows. I mean, they're not doing Detroit like they used to. They're not doing LA like they used to.
It's a different model.
Yes. Some of them are trying to adapt the model. Yeah, the Tesla model. Yeah, that's what they're trying to do.
I think some of the big car manufacturers backing out of the SEMA show is certainly not a function of or a result of SEMA being ineffective in any way, the SEMA show. This was just part of it is money and it's optics. Like, you can't be in huge negotiations with the UAW. You can't have a strike. You can't have billions of dollars of lost sales. You can't be laying off people and then go spend millions of dollars at trade shows and, you know, things that come off as more fun than anything else. Like, you kind of have to be...
but you still have to have a presence to get those people and give them confidence.
Yes.
So it's a dichotomy, right?
Yeah. And actually to Mike's point is, yes, SEMA, Ford didn't have the big display that they normally have, but you go around over to the new West Hall and Ford Performance had a smaller booth there and the big debut of the supercharger kit for the new Mustang and the crate engines. I'm like, they weren't out completely. They just said, we're not going to have this multi-million dollar presence, but we know the value of being there, especially when the marketing people on the new Mustang were all like, they were all pushing this thing going, the car isn't tunable. You can't modify it. We've really kind of locked it down. And Ford Performance going, I feel like that's going to hurt our sales if the new car sales marketing people are going, you can't tune the car. So Ford Performance shows up with a modified 2024 Mustang and supercharger packages and them going, yes, we would just prefer you buy the stuff through our partners, through Ford Performance.
Well, yeah, right? That's like Dodge going, you can't, you know, alter the PCM and then, you know, turn their back on Direct Connection, right?
And then, you're right. Direct Connect is all of a sudden, you get all the access to all this aftermarket stuff. And it's kind of what we were saying before. It's like the car companies, I think, want to have a little more control and they want a piece of the action the way...
Right.
You know, the way Apple or Google does their app store, right? You know, Ford wants the modified parts to go through their store. It's all approved by them. They get a little piece of the action. And look at the business that Apple has done through their app store and how many modifications we're going to be able to see in the future that are literally just software downloads, things like that. Tuning suspension, tuning.
That's going to be the only way that you can alter your vehicle. That's the only way that you'll be able to express yourself whatsoever is through altering the makeup of your car through your phone.
I would agree. I mean, there's some appearance stuff, cosmetic stuff, but you're right. Anything performance related, I think, is going to end up being that way. At MPMC, I sat down with a bunch of the manufacturers that have tuning companies, right? Because they've been acquired, you know, from a Diablo Sport and SCT. And I said, what are we doing on EVs? I got a Ford F-150 Lightning. And they said, well, we can do we can.
I
asked them, it's like, what's happening with EV tuning? And they said, well, we could do stuff to it, but we're afraid that over the air updates from the manufacturer will just wipe out the tune and then you'd have to re-download. I go, but we do that with apps on our phone, right? Like we got to re-download new apps on the phone because iOS has changed or something. So I guess we'll see how it's going to evolve.
Yeah, I have a little different opinion. I mean, I can remember in 2011 when they said you're never going to crack a Dodge, you know, ECU again.
Oh, yeah.
And
it
took a couple of years before we could put superchargers on them, but we did it. And then the C8 Corvette came out and it was like, oh, this is, you know, bank style software. You're never going to get in this thing.
Yeah,
and you're not going to be able to put a supercharger on it. And it's, it took the aftermarket. Look, we're innovators. We find ways.
It took them 10 minutes.
Yeah. There was an article that came out that said, does the aftermarket have 5 more years? And it talked about government intervention and all that, what was going on. It talked about the complexity of vehicles and that you're not going to be able to break into these vehicles anymore. And it talked about the youth not wanting to modify vehicles. The article was from 1975.
Exactly.
And here we are, right? And so I got faith that we'll be able to continue. And look, the OEs recognize they need us to sell more vehicles. When the new Mustang, like you said, comes out, Matt, and it's on whatever, all sorts of social media, and still, you know, there are magazines with covers on them that have those Mustangs, and, you know, it shows up in all these different forms of social media and different areas of being able to connect to the consumer, and they see that vehicle modified. They recognize that consumers are like, I want that car and I want to individualize it and I want it with those products on it. So, you know, they recognize that it's, you know, the lawyers kind of get in the way sometimes in these OEs, but they recognize it. Look, you know, Mopar would have been at the SEMA show. They were all loaded up. They had their trucks ready to go. They bought a booth at the SEMA show, and the day the trucks were supposed to leave, they had to make a decision not to come because of the union deal, because they were going through the strike. And they were really upset. I mean, they had already paid for all of that stuff, right? All the things to get to buy the booth for the show, to send people there, to load the booth up. All of that was done, and they had to make a decision because of the strike. But you know, they'll be back this year.
Okay, yeah, that's good. What's going on with EPA? What's going on with CARB? We've talked about it a few times on the air over the years. A lot of companies have been kind of fighting with those organizations, and there's been huge fines, but it doesn't necessarily have to be an acrimonious future between the aftermarket and the EPA. Have we found a resolution? Are we getting toward a resolution? Like, how's the relationship going to happen between the aftermarket? And
yeah, we continue to work on it. You know, we've beefed up a lot of our staff in the DC office, and so we're taking a lot more active role in just all sorts of government relations and having a voice in all of that. But as you know, Matt, you've been to the garage, you've seen our senior garage. We have two now. We have one in Detroit, one here in California, where we help manufacturers get through that whole EO CARB process. So if you build any product that affects fuel or air, and I mean even an intercooler, it has to go through a test to make sure it doesn't have a negative effect on emissions. And so so let's just say you're building a new supercharger or any part that affects fuel or air. You can send it to our garage. We'll fill out the application on your behalf. We'll do the testing on a vehicle on your behalf. We'll send that information into CARB, and we'll get you a CARB EO. So there is a process. Now, you know, has there been red tape along the way? You bet. It used to take up to 2 years to get an EO. We're doing it in about 4 months now. But they still will once in a while, you know, put a wrench in the gears to stop us. I mean, it took us, we built the Detroit garage and had it finished 18 months ago. And just 3 weeks ago, we got approval to do CARB testing and EPA testing. It took that long to get us certified to be able to do that work. So And honestly, at the end of the day, we had to get some government regulators involved because it was just taking way too long. We spent over $15 million to put that garage together, and we couldn't do the carb work because of the red tape. So, you know, it's kind of good sister, bad sister sometimes. You know, we've got great relations, but there are still some people that want to put a fly in the ointment and keep us from moving forward. So
now, SEMA Garage is kind of your baby.
Yeah, it was. So Matt, you know that I came from the industry.
At Street Scene Equipment. You and I met back then. Quite a while ago. Yeah.
Quite a while ago.
Aftermarket, body kits for the, you know, for cars and trucks, and with sport trucks were a big thing. Yeah. You guys were really into that.
Yeah. So, you know, bought and sold a few companies over the years, but, you know, came from the industry, was part of that. Because I did a lot of product development when I sold my shares in my company 2013, I agreed to come on to SEMA to do this product development center, the SEMA Garage. And I signed on for a 3-year contract, and I'm now 11 years into my 3-year contract. But
yeah.
But the idea was this product development center that helps manufacturers develop products and take them to market. So it's everything from, let's say you wanted on that 2024 Mustang to develop a new suspension kit for it. We get the CAD data from Ford, direct from Ford. So we can provide you with that CAD data. You can redevelop that suspension. You can send it to us. We can 3D print out the parts. We can bolt them onto the car. We can help you through all that engineering process before you even make the part. So we did a kind of a test where a air intake would used to take about 6 months to a year to develop that air intake to get the product developed, get it designed, get it built, get it into an emissions test system and get an EO. Used to take between 6 months to a year, and we can do it now in about 3 months, start to finish. So it's moving product quicker to market. It's helping the manufacturers get that product to market and getting all that emissions testing. So all of that process, we've shortened up the time frame for thousands of manufacturers.
It's a win-win. I mean, I don't see anything bad about that situation.
Yeah. It's really a cool deal. So it's really helping manufacturers get product. You know, the sooner you can get a product to market, obviously sales increase. The consumer has more choices in all those sort of products. And then working alongside the OE. So the garage will, you know, we got the Ford Bronco 8 months before it came to market. And so Ford gave us the Broncos. We brought manufacturers in to design products, to measure products. We have a CMM, a scanning machine. We've got actually 3 of them. So we can scan a part and put it into CAD and reverse engineer everything. Anything the human eye can see, we can scan and get into the, I mean, the technology today is just incredible. What you could do. Yeah.
When you guys do the measuring sessions, you bring a car in, you invite automotive manufacturers, the aftermarket manufacturers over, they get an opportunity, usually, like you said, before the vehicle is released to measure, to scan, to get data. How often is the OE manufacturer supplying that vehicle and supporting that process versus you guys trying to source a vehicle?
All the time. So in the last 3 months, we've had Hyundai here. We've had Toyota here with the new Tacoma. We've had Ford here. We've got the new Ford F-150 coming here in a couple of weeks. And so all the time. So, that you know, the manufacturers really do work with us closer than probably the public knows. And it's not a adversarial relationship. Again, while the OEs are going to have accessories available through their own dealer network, they can't do everything. I mean, they can't afford to have 12 styles of running boards or rock guards or, you know, any of those sorts of things. And they recognize that consumers still want to individualize and customize their vehicles. And so
that's a big part of the dealer business.
Right. Yeah. So while they want to have some piece of that market, they also recognize that there's consumers want choices and they're going to build these Halo vehicles. I mean, then that new Toyota Tacoma, their TRD is just an amazing, I mean, it's got all sorts of aftermarket products on it, but it's really a Halo vehicle. I mean, even when the new Ford Raptor came out, you know, people were saying, well, it's it, we're done. People are taking brand new $85,000 Raptors and they're not home 10 minutes and they're yanking parts off it and putting aftermarket parts on them. It's crazy, right?
They're doing it even before they get home.
Yeah. Bill's done it with his TRX. Honestly, Bill's probably had cars that he purchased and they ended up over at like Mario's shop at Gearheads before you even took delivery of them. It probably got delivered to him instead of you.
100%. At least half. Yeah. I mean, that's the beauty of the aftermarket world.
Right. You know, and on top of that, you know, not everybody can afford that $85,000 F-150, you know, Raptor, but they can afford the $40,000 one and build it over time. So, or buy a used one. Right. So it's a lot of it's aspirational. You know, when, you know, Matt, you were mentioning Street Scene. When I had Street Scene, we started off with just full body kits and we recognized over time that we had to sell the individual side skirts and front bumper spoilers and rear, because, you know, guys might've, you know, whatever worked and you know, been able to afford an extra $200 that week. And so they want to buy it in pieces over time. And
yeah.
That's just,
yeah, you rip your front fascia off. You don't want to have to buy the entire kit, right?
Yeah. That's true too. That's true.
Yeah.
So, it's a experience.
So yeah, speaking of builds, you have been working on, you and I have talked many times. I know you're a fan of the Japanese cars, like Adam Carolla is, and you've got a handful of cars in your collection now, but most recently you did a new Z, you did a new Nissan Z, you did a SEMA build. It's been a while since you've done a SEMA build. You've been busy with your day job.
Yeah. Every year I've always built a car or two and then we always build a charity car, you know, every year that we, and you're right. The last 2 years, I haven't been able to do that, but the Z was a fun build and it's actually my daily driver. I drove it today to work. So it's unless there's something crazy going on, that is what I drive back and forth to work every single day. And it's been a fun car. It's so far it's kept me out of trouble. You know, did a little bit of tune work to the motor, did different suspension, different tires and wheels, put some Brembo brakes on it. And it's just a fun everyday throw around. It's a proto Z, but I'm not trailer queening it. It's what I drive every day. I think I've got 15,000-16,000 miles on it already.
Did you get the bright yellow?
I did get the bright yellow.
You got the bright yellow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Already had to put a set of tires, 11,000 miles. I had to put a set of tires on it, but that's what they're for.
Yeah. Well, that's probably how you drive more than anything else.
could be.
Could be how you drive. And speaking of driving, getting a little bit of your background, like you've been on the track your whole life, right? And I don't know if everybody knows that or not, but you've done quite a bit of racing and stuff in your day.
I have. I did a lot of SCCA racing. I still do track days. You know, my kids are now into it. I do some off-roading. We were just out at King of the Hammers and had a great few days out there with the whole family off-roading. But, you know, yeah, I love to do it. It's a little embarrassing now to have your kids so much faster than you, but
I was just going to ask who's faster now, you or Junior?
Well, no. So, you know, we have a Radical and we took it out to Willow recently and I was, you know, streets of Willow. I got it down to a minute 20 and I thought I was just kicking ass. I thought I was doing pretty good. My oldest son, AJ, got into it and did a 117. And then my youngest son, Mikey, got into it and did a 113.9. And I was like, that's it. I'm going to sell the car. We're putting it back in the trailer and taking it away. You guys, you know, enough of being embarrassed, you know? And so,
I'll make you feel better, Mike. I got a simulator and my son is 17. Obviously learned how to drive a couple of years ago. Doesn't know how to drive a stick very well. So I kind of taught him on the simulator. He can smoke me now. and that was within probably 24 hours of me teaching him how to use a manual transmission.
He's got more motivation. I'm sure.
It's their motor skills. It's unbelievable how they can pick stuff up absolutely immediately. It's flabbergasted.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in LA, debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific time, only on Netflix.
Jake from State Farm here, hanging out with Mel's Mow and Grow. Mel chose State Farm for small business insurance because his local agent is a small business owner too. So she knew how to help him personalize his policies. And now, he's rolling in the green. Like a good neighbor. Guys, I'm trying to do the line.
Oh, sorry, Jake.
It's all good. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
Yes.
Well, I just, you know, we put a camera in the car, and just their hand motion.
Oh yeah.
And their ability to react is so much quicker. And, you know, and it's embarrassing, but it's fun to watch them.
It's emasculating. It's more than embarrassing.
So they're, we just bought some Legend cars, and both my boys are going to be running Legend cars this year. And that's going to be fun enough, but I'll have the headphones on and doing the spotting, I guess, and maybe some sponsorship. We'll see.
Yeah. Now you've got a Datsun Roadster, but I think the Roadster was modified. We were talking about that before, I think, in the past.
Yeah, I think we actually, between the two boys and I, we have five of them. But I'm doing a frame off 67 Solex model right now, which they only made a few hundred of. So that one's about halfway done. It's actually getting ready to be put back together. My youngest son, Mike, has a 67 as well, but he put an SR20 motor in it. And that thing's pretty trick.
Yeah. The Datsun Roadster is an interesting vehicle because it looks like a tiny lightweight vehicle. And in theory it is, but it's a full frame car. It's not a unibody car. Like it has a little bit of heft to it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it does. So, you know, I mean, I'm kind of partial to them. Coming out of high school, I went to work at a Datsun dealership, literally sweeping floors and parts delivery and all that, and used to race them. So kind of like Adam, but I have, you know, 510s and Roadsters and 240Zs and then the new Z. And kind of have an affinity towards those cars, and I've been able to pass that on to my kids as well. So that's kind of fun.
Now, I could be wrong about this, but do you have or did you have an Ariel Atom?
Yes, still have it. Yeah,
you do. You have an Ariel Atom. Yeah. Because I don't think that comes up much in the conversation, but I had an opportunity to get into an Ariel Atom at the Bondurant School when it was back in the Bondurant School. And that thing was nuts. And now, you know, I got in it for a bit, and then I jumped in it with the school's chief instructor at the time. And somebody had brought the car there just to shake it down. And he's like, let's go for a few laps. And the owner of the car was there, was like, here, take it, just do whatever. And then the instructor is just like, he's like, we're just going to go out and just thrash it and do donuts and whatever. I was like, let's throw a camera on it. Let's do it together. And we did. And that thing was just insane. What year is your Atom?
So it's actually my son's, and it's a 2016. That's got the supercharged motor in it. And, but it is, you know, I think it's all of 1300 pounds.
Yeah.
And it's just a rocket. But I, you know, I still like to get in and throw it around a little bit. We took it out to the racetrack as well recently, out to Willow, and did some track days with it. So
see, that's where I think it would be really a lot of fun, because that car is so nuts. Like you need to stretch its legs on a track and see what it can do. And again, another one of those cars where you're like, I just, you know, I wouldn't be able to drive it to its full capabilities. Like you'd have to be out on the track with like Tanner Faust or something and go, like, I would do three laps and I go, Tanner, now I'm going to ride shotgun and you do it. And then I would, like you said, I would just be embarrassed to go home.
Yeah. It's hard to find the limits of that car, but you know, it's actually also streetable, so that's kind of fun to take to car shows once in a while on a weekend, or just do a canyon run.
Yes, and because we have nice weather, you can do that in an aerial ad.
Yeah. So always fun to do. That's another great car.
What else is going on in your garage? What's you've got your new Z, you built it for SEMA, you're driving it every day. You got your sights set on something new for the year, maybe a new build for SEMA.
No. So, unfortunately this job is really keeping me busy. And in fact, again, I hate to admit some of this stuff, but, I'm actually starting to pay some people to do some of my restoring for me because I just, I can't get to it all.
Yeah.
So my days in the garage are a little more limited. I still actually planning on getting some garage time this weekend. I've got an Aston Martin that needs a little bit of tune up. Yeah. I went to drive it the other day and the battery was dead and it had a low tire and it was like, okay, I got to.
Yeah, that sounds like an Aston Martin to me, though. So you're not doing anything different than anybody else.
Sounds like every car to me.
Oh, yeah, it is, isn't it? It's you enjoy all these cars but they sit. I've got this 70Z. I've got to do a little bit of work on because it's been sitting. But so I can tinker, but I can't do all the work I used to do. I've got now my grandson who's 7. I'm going to give him my 55 Chevy truck and. That was my grandfather's actually. So we're going to start to maybe play with that thing. And I'm not quite sure what we're going to do with it yet, but I'm sure it's going to need a different chassis and, you know, we'll go through the thing. And
yeah,
but I want to get him started on something. And then all the race cars again, it's
the race cars. Yeah.
You know, unfortunately work gets in the way and this job gets in the way, but it's been a really great, challenging, fun job. It's I'm learning a lot about politics. I'm learning a lot about, and just changing the company up a little bit, you know, moving us along, innovating again. Of course, the show's important to us. We have the PRI show as well in Indianapolis. And you may know that we just bought a building in Indy as well. So
yeah,
just, you know, CMA and PRI continue to grow and expand and, you know, and making sure that our hobby is still around for all of us to enjoy it, for the next generation to enjoy.
So tell us a little bit about how people can get more involved, because SEMA has always been sort of, you know, it's been a trade organization, but now there are right. individual memberships, both with PRI yep. and SEMA, so people can join. What does that do?
Yeah, so again, we are trying to rally some of those troops, right, between SEMA Fest and now this individual membership to be able to connect closer to our members. And again, for a lot of reasons, but really, we are all going to have one voice going forward. As we talk about just these laws that continue to come into effect. I mean, you know that here in California, they shut down Oceana Dunes, which was a great popular place to go off-roading. We got 400,000 voices together, consumer voices together, along with the work we're doing with government relations, and we got that opened back up. You know, now they're trying to shut down part of Moab, and so we're trying to make sure that we still have these recreational vehicles to go out and off-road and do those sorts of things. We're seeing some racetracks disappear, you know, all of that. So if you go to SEMA.org and you can see from there where to sign up, we'd love to have our consumers together so we can connect and have one voice. And again, this year at the SEMA show, you can come to the show on Friday. You can actually walk the show. You can come to SEMA Fest Friday night, concerts, all sorts of events. We have you know, Nitro Circus this last year, we had Hoonigan guys out there. We had just a lot of fun. So that's going to continue. And Matt, you and I were there for the first one, but
it was fun.
Continue
yeah,
on.
No, it was a good time. I mean, you can definitely see what needs to be done, but it was fun. It was overall, it was fun.
Yeah. We had 16,000 people there. So, you know, we were hoping for a bit more than that, but it was a good start. And you know, to have a consumer show like that, first run, you know, you learn from it, but we also think it'll continue to grow. So
you guys have an office in Washington DC as well, and
we do.
And I can't stress that enough. Of what you don't hear much about is how much SEMA has to fight on a regular basis to, like you were saying, to protect the rights of the enthusiast and this hobby as a whole. And it's a full-time job in that you guys have to have an office in DC with lobbyists and people that are in the know there on, you know, they just have to be there. They have to do it every day.
Yeah. We've beefed up that department. We spent a couple million dollars more there this year alone, just bringing in more people and doing more functions and being more active. In May, we're going to have this, what we call a rally, where we're bringing about 200 people to DC, and we're going to set up meetings with all the legislators to talk about our issues. So we've got right to repair right now. You know, right now there's, we talked about this earlier, but the ability to continue to be able to work on your own vehicles and to be able to get into the ECUs and be able to modify. You know, coming up now, the big thing now is all these ADAS systems, right? The cameras and the sensors and all of these things on these vehicles. Take that new Ford F-150. We're doing a lot of testing now to understand what happens when you lift the vehicle and what do those cameras look like.
Yeah, it throws the cameras off.
Yeah, and so we're going to have to be able to adjust those cameras. I mean, even if you put an oversized tire on the vehicle. And so the right to be able to repair and the right to be able to modify is going to be really important to us. And there are people that want to shut all that down. And so we're talking to our legislators about the right to repair.
And Connecticut, what's going on there? Because they don't even like gas engines anymore.
Yeah, so they wanted to shut that down completely. We've been fighting that issue. We're running commercials right now in Connecticut. 67% of the consumers in Connecticut want to continue to be able to drive what they want to drive, and they don't want to have an EV mandate. And so it's just getting that voice out so that, you know, legislators will do these things behind doors, you know, without really even talking to the people they represent. And so we've been able to stall, at least for now, that idea, and we're continuing to push it back. We've actually had some success in several states now of being able to say, in Ohio, they've agreed that it's the ICE engine will continue, the internal combustion engine will continue, and there's legislation for that. So it's a state-by-state fight. It happens all the time. You know, you guys know that I'm not I'm a car guy. I'm not necessarily a political hack. I've had to learn a lot in the last few years about what this really means and how important it really is. And it's not some sort of scare tactic. This is going on. I mean, there's a bill right now in California to limit your car to 10 miles over the speed limit.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
I know how to run a hair salon, but for small business insurance, I chose my State Farm agent. She's a small business owner, too, so she knew how to help me personalize my policies. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
So, yeah, I saw that. I saw that.
Isn't that crazy?
I definitely question the motivation on a bunch of these things. When you say, you know, you can't go to Moab or you can't do a little off-roading or do whatever in Moab, I was like, well, what's happening? Is there a couple of bad apples that are making a fuss out there, and ultimately they just want a little more oversight? And they go, we're shutting the whole thing down. And then they hope that you guys come in or other people come in and go, no, that's not what you really want to do. You just want to make sure that everyone treads lightly and cleans up after themselves and doesn't hurt anything. Because it's just a weird process. It seems like it's possibly someone on the government side, typically the government, going, we're going to stop everything. And then you go, okay, but that's not really feasible. That's not really what you want to do. And you screaming, we're going to stop any off-roading or anything in Moab, is you guys getting headlines, getting attention. So, So now, like, organizations like SEMA and a bunch of consumers will spend a bunch of money to make a fuss about it and fight you on it. And ultimately what they wanted was some middle ground for them to go, let's just get a little bit of organization at Moab or something as an example, right?
Yeah. And I think, you know, sometimes it's even past that. We know for a fact that sometimes it's just posturing. They know they're going to lose the battle, but they're going to look good to some of their constituents to say, look what I tried to get done. You know, or they're just trying to grab a headline. I mean, this 10 mile over the speed limit thing, to me, is just trying to grab a headline.
It's just trying to grab a headline. Yeah.
They tried to ban lowriders. They tried to ban cruising, you know, and we fought that and won. But what a stupid thing.
Well, unfortunately, you guys have to spend so much time and money arguing the point of some of these ridiculous moves because some politician wants a headline and they're trying to get votes, or they're just trying to stand out among every other politician. And it just doesn't necessarily, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And it's weird because on their end, they're spending time and money that's not necessarily theirs.
Right.
Look, it's still our money. It's our tax money. They're spending our money coming up with things that we don't want. And then organizations like you guys, who are backed by enthusiasts, have to spend more money to go. It's a weird vicious cycle that doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense, but it has to happen. And if you guys weren't there to fill in that gap and kind of have a voice and rally the troops, then I don't know what would happen.
Yeah. And again, nobody's against clean air. Nobody wants to continue to roll coal and pollute and do all those sorts of things. I mean, you know, we are responsible people. We want to take care of the off-roading community. We want to make sure that we tread lightly. We want to, all that stuff is going on. But sometimes politicians, again, either don't get it or they see it, you know, obviously a different way. It's an agenda. And then they don't recognize the economic impact. You know, we did a study that said, if this California thing goes through, we've got to have 30% of electric vehicles by 2026. It's $67 billion a year to the California economy alone in just our industry that it affects. And so, you know, when you shut down these off-road areas, they don't recognize that the hotels, that the restaurants, that the gas stations, that whole economy in that area goes down. King of the Hammers alone brings in a couple hundred thousand people out to Johnson Valley, out in the middle of the desert. Every one of those enthusiasts is buying stuff to go out there through our industry. They're buying camping goods. They're buying food. They're buying all that sort of stuff. They've got to stop at gas stations and restaurants along the way.
And for no other reason would they be going out there if it wasn't for the event.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They're not right.
I know we all have to be responsible, and we are, but they've got to understand the whole picture. They got to understand what impact they're causing when they try to do these sorts of things.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Like, for those of you guys listening to the show, it's like, yes, we have opinions, but I don't like to assume I know what's going on both sides of the fence. Right. And like you were saying, you know, you've been in this industry for a long time, but now taking the role of CEO at SEMA, having to learn really how the politics work and what it all means and why certain rules and politicians are speaking up about things that don't necessarily make a lot of sense. And as Bill said, there's an agenda behind it, and you kind of have to peek behind the curtain to find out what that agenda is before you can try to solve it, you know, before you can try to solve the issue. But
how else could they try to sell something so illogical?
Like, you're right. You see something like, you know, we want to make every car in California not go more than 10 miles over the speed limit. Like, why? Like, what's it? And I know on the surface, they're going to like, it's going to reduce accidents or something. I go, I don't know that it is. So what's the real agenda? What's the point of even saying that or making that statement or doing whatever? You know, it doesn't make sense. And I love the part where they go, this is an idea that I have. I think it's going to make everything better. We haven't spent a dime or even looked into if it's realistic or not, or if it really would make things safer. But I'm just going to go ahead with my press release and go, this is my new agenda, is no car going over 10 miles an hour. We're going to regulate everything. And I'm going to make up why I think it would be better. And then someday I'm going to get the taxpayer money to spend that money to see if my thoughts were real or not, if it holds water. I go, well, that doesn't make sense. And do we get to say on how you're spending that money? Well, we do. We got to vote. We got to get better people in there. I just don't really know what the agenda is.
No, that's right. And you know, let alone they've got to have to put something on your vehicle to make sure you can't. I mean, it's just another piece of government intervention where they're going to put something on my car to make sure that I can't go more than 10 miles. And think about
we'll be paying for it.
We're all going to pay for it.
I mean, what, What if somebody has to get away from someone, right? What if, I mean, there's all sorts of reasons that you know, you may have to go more than 10 miles over the speed limit, right?
How about evading someone for an accident?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, absolutely. So, for sure. Yeah,
so, you know, this is where I spend a lot of my day, and this is welcome to my world. But the other side of that is we have friends on both sides of the aisle, and you got to have bipartisan friends that help you understand, you know, what's going on. And so we spent a lot of time on that. We spent a lot of time, you know, talking to politicians on both sides of the aisles. We had an event here last Friday night with a fundraiser for a Democrat that's running, that believes in what we're trying to get done. So it's fun and it's challenging and it's interesting. And you really recognize that these guys are no different than us. You know, they may have a different agenda, but you got to be able to sit down and talk to them.
Yeah.
And they're, yeah.
Mike, I appreciate it. This has been fun as always. And I can't wait to catch up with you at another event, someplace where we can just enjoy the cars and the new things and not have to talk about the politics of it, which fortunately we still get to do a few times a year.
Yeah.
We get to pop up at various events. So there is the fun side of it. We talk about the politics of it and everything, but there is the fun side of it. And I want to remind everybody, you can get individual memberships now. You can go to SEMA.org. You can get a SEMA membership for yourself. You can get a PRI membership. You can go and you can purchase tickets to the SEMA show on Friday now. I still think it's a limited amount of tickets, but you can still do that and kind of get a peek behind the curtain, see arguably one of the greatest car show in the world, because it's got cars and parts and all kinds of fun stuff there. So it's great to support it and be a part of something that you enjoy. Yeah. And that's most people listening to this show.
Well, it's always great to hang out with both you guys and Matt. Yeah. We need to do a little bit more of that. We all love this car culture. We all love all parts of it. We all love hanging out together, just bench racing. And Matt, I haven't got an update on your build either, your Mustang build or any of that sort of stuff. So
to catch up on things. We've been so focused on building a beverage company that I haven't really focused on building any of the cars. So we've got our hands full for sure. But Bill's jumped into it. Now that he spent 4 years on getting his garage done, that now he's got the cars to work on in the garage. And it's nice having the great facility to do it. But now that the garage is done, you realize you got to do car shit.
Yeah.
I got brakes to go do, boys.
Yeah. But he's having a good time. And of course you can follow Bill on Goldberg's Garage, because he's getting so much more fun content up there, and you can see the projects that are going up there. And it's been fun. It's been an interesting learning experience for a guy who's been on TV for most of his life. Having to do it all on your own in the shop there, you know, you have a crew, but to basically decide what it's going to be and how you're going to do it in the builds, and it's all encompassing, that it's a little different, but it's getting fun. It's getting more fun by the day.
100%. I'm actually seeing things actually be completed right in front of my eyes. So yes, that makes it fun. And the ability to put together all of the people that Mike help out, you know, each and every year, and to culminate in one of these killer projects. That's awesome. You guys all know about that. So
that's awesome. Yeah. So, yeah. That's the thrill of it, right? The thrills in the build, as much as it's
100%. And not having a deadline.
Yeah. Right. Not having a deadline. Well, now that you got cameras rolling, there's a little bit of the public opinion deadline.
But just remember, they can form an opinion with the information that you give them.
Yeah.
Period. End of story.
Sure. Yeah. 100%.
It's still television.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thanks so much. I appreciate it. And thanks you guys for listening. And we'll catch you next week. Until then, keep the air and the spare in the bag and the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.